Today, as Donald Trump leaves hospital, we ask, how was COVID-19 allowed to spread through the White House? For months, Donald Trump has been trying to change the subject away from the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the US. Yesterday, he was even doing it from his hospital suite where he was being treated for the virus itself. In a torrent of 20 tweets, most written in full capital letters, all ending in exclamation marks, he tried to persuade Americans to support him in the upcoming election. "Religious liberty, vote," he wrote. "Pro-life, vote. Law and order, vote. Fight the corrupt fake news media, vote." But however loudly Trump shouts to his 86.9 million Twitter followers about all these other issues, he knows that with questions over how he contracted coronavirus and news of yet more positive tests in the White House, he has to address this issue head on. And yesterday, we got a taste of how he might try to do that in another tweet, saying he was leaving hospital feeling good, better than 20 years ago, and said people shouldn't be afraid of COVID and shouldn't let it dominate their lives. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, how COVID-19 got personal for Donald Trump. David, do you know what we need to focus on to understand where this began?
How Donald Trump was infected with the coronavirus and where and by whom still remains a mystery that we'll perhaps never know the answer to.
David Smith is the Washington, D.C. bureau chief for The Guardian.
But a good starting point is a ceremony he held in the White House Rose Garden about 10 days ago. This was to unveil his nominee to the Supreme Court, Amy Coney Barrett.
Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
And so this was Trump really, again, trying to change the conversation away from the coronavirus. Quite a lot of pomp and pageantry. The Rose Garden at the White House, very full of about 150 people, huge stars and stripes bedecking the colonnades, and Trump looking relaxed, and very strikingly, very few people wearing face masks, people sitting very closely together. People were laughing very relaxed, and once the main ceremony was done, you could see pictures of people hugging, embracing, talking at very close quarters. They were also went inside the White House building, some kind of reception, again indoors in very close proximity. And reportedly, they had been told there was no need to worry about distancing and masks because they had all been tested. I myself have been through that process at the White House a few times, pretty much on arrival. We're called into a back room, one by one. A doctor or nurse is there. It's a swab up both nostrils. Only if you get bad news will you actually hear anything. And fortunately for me, that's not happened yet.
Why so much focus on this event?
Several days later, with the president testing positive, this event has taken on a great deal of significance. So far, at least seven people who were there in the Rose Garden that day have tested positive for the coronavirus. And there's a fascinating photograph that shows you in the front four rows, you can pinpoint these seven people, including Chris Christie, who was Trump's debate coach. He's sitting at one end, two Republican senators there, one of whom was later seen hugging somebody, Kellyanne Conway, the former White House counselor, and some others. And you can see them clustered closely together. It's a fascinating image that implies how the virus might spread. And of course, also in amongst those guests at the front is the First Lady, Melania Trump, who has also tested positive. So this event appears to have been a super spreader event. And that's our best guess right now where the virus might really have taken off.
A super spreader event where everybody apparently tested negative, although as we know, a positive test often won't show up for several days after exposure to the virus. That was 10 days ago, and from there, we had the first presidential debate on Tuesday night, where Donald Trump was pressed on his response to coronavirus. He was accused of being too slow to act and failing to wear a mask. He himself mocked Joe Biden on that point.
Things that you have to, but I wear masks when needed. When needed, I wear masks.
Okay, let me ask.
I don't wear masks like him. Every time you see him, he's got a mask. He could be speaking 200 feet away from it, he shows up with the biggest mask I've ever seen. I will say this.
But he did actually take a mask out of his pocket at one point and said he would wear one if he needed to, but at this debate, everyone had been tested. Had they? And if so, what were the results?
That's a great question, because subsequently, Chris Wallace, who was the moderator of that debate, came forward and said, well, actually, Donald Trump and his supporters, including his family, arrived at the venue pretty late in the day and too late for the debate organisers to carry out any kind of meaningful test. So basically, we've just got the Trump campaign's word for it, that President and all those other people were tested. It was a kind of honour system. And now there's a great deal of scrutiny because Trump's children and others in his camp sat in the debate hall without face masks. And it was a very vivid contrast from Joe Biden's family and supporters, all of whom were wearing face masks. In a single image, you could see the different approaches to this crisis.
We know that the president was told on Thursday morning that his close aide, Hope Hicks, had tested positive. He was on the plane, ready to fly to New Jersey for a campaign event at his golf club with 100 guests, and he went ahead with that. What happened next?
Donald Trump returned to Washington. There was no official word on Hope Hicks testing positive, and it was left to a journalist to break that news, which the White House and Donald Trump himself then had to confirm. That night, the Thursday, Trump gave an interview to Sean Hannity on Fox News.
By the way, some news broke earlier this evening. Hope Hicks, who's worked for you for a long time, has tested positive for coronavirus. Obviously, our prayers are with her. And by the way, everybody that is, as you call, gotten this invisible enemy. Do you have any update on her? And where are we with therapeutics? Where are we with the vaccine?
So she did test positive. I just heard about this. She tested positive. She's a hard
sounded upbeat as usual. Talked a bit about Hope Hicks. Even managed to grumble a bit on how it's difficult to maintain physical distancing when you meet law enforcement and the military, and they tend to want to shake hands and hug and so on.
We have it. I don't know. You know, it's very hard when you're with soldiers, when you're with airmen, when you're with the Marines, and I'm with and the police officers. I'm with them so much, and when they come over to you, it's very hard to say, "Stay back, stay back." You know, it's a tough kind of a situation. It's a terrible thing.
So, and then, quite dramatically, just before 1 a.m. on Friday, there was another Donald Trump tweet announcing that he and Melania Trump had tested positive and would now be undergoing treatment.
It was quite a tweet. That led to a hell of a reaction, didn't it?
It certainly did.
And in the last few minutes, President Trump has tweeted saying that he and the First Lady have tested positive for COVID-19. Let's go straight to Los Angeles and our U.S. correspondent.
Positive for the coronavirus after a top aide of his tested positive herself.
President Trump and the First Lady in quarantine after testing positive for COVID-19. Now the news upending an already chaotic campaign season with the election just 32 days away.
On one level, is anybody really surprised that Donald Trump contracted the coronavirus after all his risky behavior, his thumbing the nose at science, and finally cold scientific reality catching up with him? And some said, told you so. Some said, hoist with his own petard. But this was also the commander-in-chief of the world's most powerful country, now with a deadly virus, huge national security implications. Yeah, clearly a massive news story by any measure. And as that sank in, there was a torrent of other both White House and Republican Party officials coming forward acknowledging they had tested positive, whether it was the chairperson of the Republican National Committee, Rena McDaniel, who's a key Trump ally, Donald Trump's campaign manager, Bill Stepien, others in the White House. And suddenly it did beg the question, how far has this virus spread within the White House building?
How did Trump's political opponents react?
Biden, the following morning, issued a message of sympathy and wishing Trump well. Other Democratic leaders did so. Inevitably, there were some on the left in social media who were immediately mocking Trump and putting out memes and so on. But overall, it did make something of a throwback to the politics of old. Biden was quite dignified.
I would like to start by sending my prayers for the health and safety of the First Lady and President of the United States after they tested positive for COVID-19. My wife Jill and I prayed that they'll make a quick and full recovery. This is not a matter of politics. It's a bracing reminder to all of us that we have to take this virus seriously.
Now, that didn't stop him in a speech still attacking Trump's policy on the coronavirus. But he has taken down attack ads and tried to avoid partisanship on this issue.
Okay, and then we reached early evening on Friday in the US, which was later in the evening here. And I was watching the BBC's US editor, John Sopel, on the news that night.
He tweeted, "Tonight, the First Lady and I tested positive for COVID-19.
And he was talking about how the White House was suggesting the president was in good spirits.
"Today, the president's chief of staff gave reporters this update.
The president and the First Lady remain in good spirits."
And actually, at the same time, a friend of mine texted and said they'd heard that Trump was about to head to hospital, which I didn't believe because of what I was watching. And then suddenly came that switch in the news. So my friend clearly had a very good source. And then we saw the helicopter ready to take him. Had they misled us about his condition, or was there a sense that this was simply precautionary?
I think there is a widespread suspicion they were misleading. And one example of that was Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, spoke to reporters on Friday morning and really gave a very positive, upbeat assessment.
And so even as recent as this morning at a little after 8 o'clock, the president was giving me a number of things to make sure that I get done. And I'm sure that
he talked about Trump being high energy and working. And then very abruptly and unexpectedly, Marine One was on the White House South Lawn. That's the presidential helicopter. And word broke that he was going to hospital, the Walter Reed Military Hospital in nearby Bethesda, Maryland. I think that was a shock and a realization that perhaps his condition was more serious than anyone suspected and that officials had told us. The timing was curious. There was some speculation perhaps the administration was waiting for the stock market to close on Friday, mindful just how obsessed Donald Trump is with the ups and downs of the stock market as a measure of economic success. And so it was just sometime after 6 p.m. that Donald Trump walked out across the South Lawn. He gave a wave and a thumbs up, not particularly ebulliently, did not stop to speak to reporters and boarded the helicopter and flew off. And I think millions of people were watching it on TV, somewhat spellbound. It was another dramatic twist in the Trump presidency.
Do we know what the mood was like in the White House?
The mood in the White House was said to be one of fear and anxiety and panic for a few reasons. There was a dawning realization that Trump's health might be more fragile than suspected, that the coronavirus really could have very serious consequences for him. And then also a growing fear among staff that they too could be at risk. If the most protected person in the world can get this virus, then anyone can. And whenever I've been to the White House, certainly I've seen very few precautions taken by staff and officials there. Those who do try to wear face masks are generally ridiculed.
Ridiculed how?
It's seen as just not a macho thing to do. And so many events, press conferences and other times, you'll see all the journalists religiously wearing masks and pretty much all the White House staff not doing so, taking Trump's lead. I mean, the other thing not everyone would realize about the White House and the West Wing in particular is that, unlike television portrayals, it's pretty cramped and old-fashioned. Small spaces, narrow corridors, really an ideal breeding ground for the virus.
And from the off, there was suspicion around what we were being told. Firstly, because the timeline didn't really add up from what we know about COVID-19. Donald Trump went from a positive test on Thursday to being hospitalised on Friday evening. And the confusion continued beyond that. As a White House reporter, how were you getting information about Trump's condition?
It was generally pretty hard from the official White House communication channels. And if there's one indication of Trump himself not being on top form, his Twitter account became a lot less prolific. He did put out occasional messages. There was a cryptic one saying, "Going well, I think," which lacked his usual certainty. But otherwise, information is very hard to come by. There were demands for a press conference from Trump's official physician and the medical team. That would be standard procedure in the past when presidents fall ill. And that finally came about on Saturday morning at around 11 a.m.
As reported yesterday, consultation with this group, I recommended we bring the president up to Walter Reed as a precautionary measure to provide state-of-the-art monitoring and any care that he may need.
That was outside the Walter Reed Hospital. But that only really deepened a lot of the mystery and added to the confusion and contradictions.
Okay, well, let's start with that. Who leads Trump's medical team? And what did he tell us in that briefing on Saturday morning?
Trump's official physician is Dr. Sean Conley.
Morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. Dr. Sean Conley, physician to the president. This morning, I'd like to start by first sharing that the president and first family, first lady, extremely grateful for the enormous outpouring of support and prayers that the whole world and country have been providing and sharing.
I think he's been in that position a couple of years. He's only 40 years old. And he led this press conference on Saturday and painted a very rosy picture of the president's health.
This morning, the president is doing very well.
Talked about him being up and about. He said his condition had greatly improved and was really reluctant to share any bad news. And one thing that was striking was he was asked repeatedly if Trump had received supplemental oxygen. And Dr. Conley was very evasive on that matter, saying things like, well, not today, and wouldn't quite be pinned down on the reality of it. And he also talked about the timeline and, by his own later admission, got it wrong. Talked about 72 hours, and that made everyone think maybe Trump had actually tested positive earlier than acknowledged, which, of course, would have been a sensation in terms of where Trump had been and was he spreading the virus. The doctor had to subsequently issue a statement. He also eventually had to clarify this issue of supplemental oxygen because in the absence of official information, anonymous sources, of course, were leaking a lot to the US media. It emerged that Trump had been given supplemental oxygen and the doctor later had to acknowledge that.
And his positive tone was contradicted, wasn't it, by senior figures in the White House?
Well, that's right. Shortly after this press conference by the medical team, there was a briefing reporters that was initially billed as off the record. But Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, was seen on video talking to reporters. And
okay, so who...
Obviously, the cameras are still rolling, so if we can go off the record with some of y'all and get away from the cameras...
Sure.
Media outlets eventually widely published his name. And Meadows, yeah, gave a far more sober assessment, saying how deeply concerned staff had been. On the Friday, Trump's blood oxygen level had dipped, and how the next 48 hours were critical, and how he still did not have a clear path to recovery. According to some US media reports, Trump was very angry about this. Later that night, Meadows went on TV.
Joining me now to discuss this and more, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows.
He tried to clear it up a bit, talking about Trump being greatly improved and working hard and being up and about. But even during that interview, Meadows reiterated what the concerns had been on Friday and how Trump had required oxygen. And
as the doctor said, he's not out of the woods the next 48 hours or so. With the history of this virus, we know can be tough. But
in saying that, he was contradicting himself because, if you remember, Meadows had given that very upbeat assessment to reporters on the Friday morning. On Sunday, the medical team gave another press conference, again, extremely optimistic, even floating the idea that Trump might be able to check out of the hospital on Monday, but this time acknowledging mistakes. Dr. Conley even said, "I was trying to paint an optimistic picture." So this and other wrinkles, other details, has really, I think, damaged trust and credibility. And the biggest problem of all, perhaps, of course, is it comes against the backdrop of nearly 4 years of false and misleading statements, of lack of information. I mean, this all began on the first day of the administration, telling a lie about Donald Trump's crowd size at his inauguration.
One thing we do know is that he received some quite aggressive and experimental treatment. Can you tell me about that? And does that give us a clue to how poor his condition was?
Yeah, Trump has been given first an experimental cocktail of drugs. That raised some eyebrows. It's only really been used in clinical trials. That was around the time that he had a fever. Subsequently, and more predictably, he was given remdesivir, which has been successful on many patients. And I think that's a reminder that if Trump has had any good fortune with this, it's that he's got the virus now rather than 6 months ago, because clearly medical experts have been able to build up some knowledge about what works and what doesn't. But a surprise that came on Sunday was that he's also receiving a steroid that the World Health Organization and other experts have said you're only really given this if things are quite serious. That really begged the question, could he leave the hospital soon if he's on that? Those things don't add up. And there's some speculation there, either that shows it genuinely is serious and it's being covered up, or, knowing Trump, is he calling the shots himself and demanding all sorts of treatments, perhaps because he's itching to get back on the campaign trail or anxious to resolve this?
And much of this kind of confusion and mistrust is perhaps what is leading to conspiracy theories all over social media. And then at the end of the weekend, on Sunday evening, the most bizarre thing happened. Donald Trump posted that slightly odd video promising a secret trip to visit his patriots, as he called them, outside the hospital. And off he went in his car with other people in the same vehicle when he's got COVID-19. How worried are people about that?
Very worried, utterly bizarre and weird, and yet I think very much in character. It's perhaps a sign that Trump is still himself, in that he is the eternal showman and the master of spectacle and distraction. So he put out this rather peculiar video.
This is an incredible hospital, Walter Reed. The work they do is just absolutely amazing, and I want to thank them all.
Where he said he was going to take this little parade.
I'm not telling anybody but you, but I'm about to make a little surprise visit, so perhaps I'll get
and
there.
And he also, by the way, said that, you know, he's learned a lot about the virus and now he gets it.
So it's been a very interesting journey. I learned a lot about COVID. I learned it by really going to school. This is the real school. This isn't the let's read the book school. And I get it, and I understand it.
Which I think will be cold comfort for the families of the 200,000 people who've died. And then indeed he was being driven around outside Walter Reed Hospital.
And his motorcade just went directly past a gathering of his supporters who were outside Walter Reed. The president waving to them. And now we are told he's back inside the hospital in the presidential suite there.
At least one doctor who works at that hospital is fiercely critical of this move, the endangering the Secret Service driver and passenger in that car, which is so airtight, it's one of the worst possible places to share with someone who's contagious with a virus. Yeah, really, really quite extraordinary, and suggests he has not learned his lesson from this.
I'm not sure if I took what he said in that video as Donald Trump admitting that he now gets it. I mean, he said he thought that his experience of this was very interesting, and we could expect to hear more on that. Given he could be back in the White House by the time people are listening to this, but this whole period has obviously shone a light on what happens in America if a president is incapacitated. Is that clear?
I think the answer is yes and no. There are some protocols that are clear, and I think some people took reassurance in how the state still functions. You know, president falls ill, there's a helicopter there to take him away. There's hospital staff ready with world-class treatment. Everybody knows that if he's truly stricken and can no longer function, then there's a vice president who tested negative, Mike Pence, who could take over. Similar situations have happened before. However, there are ambiguities in the system too. You know, would Trump himself willingly transfer power to Pence if it came to that, or would he resist even if his mental state broke down? There was a particular question mark over, well, what happens if Mike Pence is infected with coronavirus too and incapacitated? Then, in theory, power will transfer to Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker. Of course, she is a Democrat. But for now, I think that fear has receded. But yeah, it's a mix of certainty and ambiguity, I think.
Coming up, what impact will this have on the election? Let's talk about the election. It seems to me that, on the one hand, Trump didn't want coronavirus to be on people's minds, so that's bad for him. But on the other hand, there'll obviously be a surge in sympathy towards him, and this does reset a campaign that wasn't going that well for him. Is there any consensus on what impact this will have?
No, people are not sure how this is going to bounce politically. I think probably the most likely is that it hurts Trump, really for two reasons. He's obviously got to suspend his campaign rallies for the foreseeable future. And those are very important to him, I think, both for his own morale. He really thrives off the energy of the crowd and feels reaffirmed and loves to say, you know, is there anything as much fun as a Trump rally? But secondly, as you mentioned, this makes it very difficult to change the conversation away from coronavirus. And Trump had been trying hard to do that. Again, he had a huge crowd for the Republican National Convention with few guidelines. He had that event for the Supreme Court. We all thought the Supreme Court was going to dominate October as the issue. He certainly wanted to focus attention on the economy, and now all that has been blown up, and coronavirus is front and centre again as the defining issue of the 2020 presidential election. And when you consider its historic impact, perhaps that was always inevitable.
And we'll soon see how dominant this is going to be with a vice presidential debate, and then perhaps even a presidential debate carried out remotely. There's also going to be a political battle over Amy Coney Barrett's nomination. We now have three Republican senators isolating with COVID-19 that could make that difficult. And that brings me to my final question. When we think about this outbreak, it is pretty extraordinary. All of this seems pretty symbolic to me of the president's policy around this disease, from the hugs in the Rose Garden that you began with, to the continuation of mass rallies. Do you think his illness changes anything about the way Americans view this virus?
I would hope so. Symbolic is the right word for that event in the Rose Garden and for Donald Trump himself becoming the world's most famous coronavirus patient. You know, he's tried to deny it so long. He's responsible really for the change where, you know, in the past America faced major crises and it brought people together. This time it's inflamed divisions and you've seen a culture war over something like the face mask. You would hope now, surely, there are some people who see that even Trump can be infected and therefore the measures do have to be taken more seriously. It is time perhaps to end those divisions, at least on this issue, and listen to what the scientists have to say rather than some of Trump's speculations. You might recall a few months ago he was talking about it, injecting bleach into coronavirus patients and all of that. But having said that, I do fear that if Trump emerges relatively unscathed, he may yet try to argue, well, that shows, you know, what was all the fuss about? I can beat it, so maybe it's not such a terrible disease after all. What we know about Trump is it would be wildly optimistic to assume that he, from the top, is going to suddenly have a dramatic change of heart and now issue some responsible messaging. I think, you know, he will do what suits him electorally. But nevertheless, yes, you would hope that the message would get through to some people, and it really has to, because cases are climbing again in America. There are fears of a second wave, especially as we go into winter. So this is a very timely symbol in that sense.
David Smith, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was David Smith, our Washington, D.C. bureau chief, speaking to us for an episode that we finished before we went to bed in the UK. This is, of course, a fast-moving story, so do follow David's reporting on the website and that of many other colleagues at Guardian US. Do also keep up with all of it on our Rolling Live blog that is updated 24 hours a day. There's also a huge amount of excellent coverage ahead of the election. Go to theguardian.com. That's it for today. My thanks to David Smith. This episode was produced by Mithili Rao and Hannah Moore. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.